This is the MedicCast, April 12th, 2010.
Transmitters? We don't need no stinking transmitters!
This is the MedicCast, a podcast for EMS providers by EMS providers, featuring EMS news, products, tips, tricks, and commentary. So grab your gear and glove up! Here's today's show with the Podmedic, Jamie Davis.
Well, good day and welcome to this week's episode of the MedicCast. I'm your host, Jamie Davis, the Podmedic, and I'd like to welcome everybody to the show this week. We, as always, want to make an especially happy and joyful welcome, I guess. Oh, that's weird. Anyway, we just want to welcome everybody who are brand new listeners. We always seem to see a spike this time of year. People are out there looking for study aids for their EMS classes, whether they're EMT or paramedic students. People are getting ready to test. It's the end of, nearing the end of semester for a lot of students in college programs out there. And so I always get a spike this time of year. And I just wanted to remind all of you to, if you don't know somebody who's listening to the MedicCast and you know a bunch of students or you're an instructor, you know, now is the time to share the program with your students, the people you know. It's really important that we do everything we can to help give people the tools they need to have information from a lot of different resources. And because of the information I provide in the show notes, the tip of the week, the fact that you can go to the MedicCast blog and search over there for all of the 214 odd podcasts I've done over the last 4 years, I think there are a lot of tools over there that people are not necessarily aware of. So share the MedicCast with people you know, and I see that happening more and more every single week. So just want to welcome everybody. And of course, don't forget, you can go to MedicCast.com/blog and check out the show notes link right at the top of the page. That'll take you to the list of episodes, the most recent episode at the top, and then going back in time as you scroll down. You can find all of the episodes there. So if you have a recent episode you're looking for, you'll find the recent episodes right there on the first page in that section, or you can just search for the topic you're looking for over in the search bar right at the upper right corner of the page. And all of that information is available, again, at mediccast.com/blog. If you want to get in touch with me by email, the best way to do that is to send me an email to podmedic@mac.com, and I will get back to you. I return every email I get. I really try hard to do that. I get a lot of email, folks, but I will get back to you. It might take me a couple of days, but I will respond to your email and get you some kind of an answer if you have a question for me or just a comment. It's always great to hear from listeners. So check in, and we'll get back in touch with you. And also, you can always leave comments on any of the articles or show notes pages over at the blog at mediccast.com/blog. And of course, you can get in touch with me also through Facebook and Twitter if you're following that way. And you'll find me under the handle Podmedic at both those places. Also, become a friend of the MedicCast fan page. You can do that over at Facebook, MedicCast.com. Facebook.com/MedicCast is the new way to get that. Actually was able to figure out how to do that. So it's Facebook.com/MedicCast, and you can become a fan of the MedicCast over there. I post things early over there and extra video segments and things like that. So if you're a fan over there, you'll actually get some additional content, and it's a good reason to head over there and check that out. I will be heading out to Denver. In fact, while many of you have downloaded this early in the week, I actually will be in Denver meeting with the gang from Chronicles of EMS. We're working together to really change the way people learn about EMS stuff and to really provide us a resource and a channel for all things EMS and over at chroniclesofems.com. So, you know, if you've been listening to the MedicCast, you're going to love the video content, basically your own TV shows over at chroniclesofems.com. And I'm going to be meeting with those guys in Denver, including Chris Montero of the EMS Garage podcast, who really helped organize the facilities where we're going to be meeting for a couple of days. And also, of course, Ted Setla, the director and producer of the Chronicle stuff, as well as Justin Shore and Mark Glencourse will all be there, along with Carissa O'Brien, and just meeting and figuring out exactly where we're heading next with Chronicles of EMS. And you can find out more and follow what we're doing and either either following me on Twitter or any of the other gang on Twitter or over at chroniclesvms.com. But we've been exchanging a lot of emails and checking back and forth with each other, and I'm looking forward to that meetup coming up here. In fact, probably going on while you're listening to the show, if you're downloading this right after it was released. I kind of snuck into the email segment, talking about the emails and stuff from Chronicles VMS gang, but I will move into official listener email. Our good friend Jerry Barrett down in Australia sent me another article, and I'll be posting that soon here on the Medicast if it hasn't already been posted. So on self-defense, personal self-defense techniques for medical professionals. This is not how to attack your patient, but how to protect yourself when the patient attacks you. He wrote this article for another organization, but I was able to get permission by being a good friend of Jerry's to post all or some of it over at the Medicast blog. So that'll be posted in segments over the next week or so. And I would urge you to head over and check that out. Jerry has a history of tactical EMS working in the military with Australia, as well as also as a working paramedic and a healthcare provider for a remote mom in a remote area of Australia. And so he is really, very, very well versed in taking care of patients, but also taking care of himself. And I think this is a great article. There's some good pictures in there of some of the self-defense techniques. And I'll be posting, I think, segments of that article and maybe a link to a downloadable PDF or something that you can grab from that link. Just a way for all of us to make sure that we're observing scene safety and protecting ourselves adequately from an attack from a patient or a bystander while we're on a call. I've also been continuing my correspondence this week with Rhett and John over at the Firefighter Netcast. We're helping them put together a live podcast event at the FDIC conference in Indianapolis coming up here in just a couple of weeks. So if you're actually attending the FDIC conference, the firefighters, whatever it is, conference, there's the EMS stuff there. So I know a lot of you may be attending or know someone who's attending. Make sure you tell them to find Rhett and John in their booth. They'll be actually recording several podcasts throughout the course of each day in the exhibit hall. And when you find their booth, stop by and say hi. Tell them Jamie sent you. Stop by and hear their podcast. Listen to what they're doing. Get a chance to meet them and shake their hand. Really give them support and check out their show. It's really a great show. You can find it over at blogtalkradio.com, firefighternetcast.com. And they just do a good job of putting together a great podcast. And it's a long podcast, and they have a lot of fun recording it. So if you want to enjoy a great discussion on issues related to the fire service and including some EMS issues, you might want to check out that show. And again, if you're heading over to the FDIC conference in Indianapolis, definitely when you get to that expo, you want to check out them on the show floor during the hours for the exhibit hall. Finally, I want to offer a great welcome back. I got an email from our resident writer, Leanne. Leanne has been on hiatus. She had a lot of things going on with her classes and family life, and she has gotten back with me and wanted to know if I would still like her to write some occasional articles for the Medicast. And I was like, well, sure, would I? Of course I would. She just does a fantastic job finding really good, relevant EMS research and news items out there and writes really good commentary and articles about what she sees going on and what her perceptions are. And so if you haven't checked out the articles she writes over at the Medicast, you should definitely do that. Again, medicast.com/blog. And I just, again, a heartfelt welcome back to Leanne. I'm really looking forward to, she's already written a couple of things, and I'm looking forward to the continued output of just amazing articles from her. So we're really blessed to have her as a valuable part of the Medicast community. Time now to jump into this week's news, and I'm going to lead off with a news item coming out of EMSresponder.com, looking at a story about a man who nearly removes his own leg with a chainsaw. Now, we see a lot of accidents. Recently in New York State, they had just a whole slew of really bad storms cut through, lots of rain, lots of damage, trees down, limbs down, and in the midst of that, people were cleaning up, and a 39-year-old man was cutting up a tree and with a chainsaw that had come down, and when he was working, he nearly cut his own leg off. And so it just kind of points out some of the things we might expect to see in different seasons of the year. And you know, as the weather gets nicer outside, people will be going out and doing things that they've been putting off all winter. And of course, if you have storms come through and there's a lot of cleanup to be done, there'll be things happening related to normal spring thunderstorms. And if you're in an area with hurricanes, different types of storm damage. And so you might have people up repairing a roof and falling off the roof. I mean, not every homeowner out there has a ladder that's in good repair or has a ladder that's too short and they use it improperly. They don't have someone making sure it has a stable footing. So you have people that have fallen. You have people that have things fall on them. And of course, you have people that have injuries related to using tools and having an accident occur. And so you're going to have lawnmower injuries. You're going to have all kinds of things. And it's just important, I think, this article points out to us that it's really a good idea to look at what's going on around your community. Think about the activities you're doing more of as the weather gets nicer, and that'll give you a clue about the types of things and injuries you might be running into with your patients when you're at your station running calls. Let's jump on into the next story. And this is another one of those stories where EMS providers have declared someone dead before their time. And, you know, yeah, okay, we can have a little chuckle about that, but this is really no laughing matter. And it's really disturbing to me when this type of thing happens because, you know, there's some simple things we can do to declare a patient deceased. And, you know, it's clear to me when I see this kind of thing that that wasn't done. We have heart monitors, we have stethoscopes, we have our assessment eyes and ears and everything else, and we should be being darn sure that any patient we encounter that we think is dead is really dead. You know, it's not like in The Princess Bride where, you know, they're only mostly dead. This is a situation where we run into, you know, patients that could need, that indeed need our care in some way. And we'll never know. I mean, this particular story from Maryland, two paramedics responded to a call for an elderly man, hadn't been seen for several days. They found him unconscious, unresponsive in his apartment. Neighbors had discovered him originally. They got there and declared him dead. They then left, and police evidence technicians actually called 911 back because the man was still alive. And they another unit responded, took him to the hospital. He later died. And so it's unclear whether he would have died eventually anyway. But what is clear is that he was not dead when the first crew got there and when the first crew left. And so when we talk about what do you do in this situation, you know, I don't like to second guess these stories and the paramedics on the street. So I just try to apply what I would do and what I would change, or how would I adjust or make sure that if I have a patient who's dead, that they're not just mostly dead, but they're dead. And you need to really review your protocols for PDOA, presumed dead on arrival. There are very clear protocols in most places on what you can and cannot declare dead. And, you know, you have to really follow those protocols. And that takes a thorough assessment, folks. You can't walk up and tell from across the room. You can't walk up and take a radial pulse and feel around for a carotid pulse and say, well, I can't find anything. They don't seem to be breathing. They're dead. You know, you've got a stethoscope. You need to listen to a heartbeat. You need to listen for like a minute. Make sure you've got good sounds. You know, if you're not sure, listen, make sure you can hear your own heartbeat. And, you know, that just, there are all kinds of things that could go wrong here. You know, take the extra time. It should take as long to assess a patient who is presumed dead to make sure they're dead, as long as it takes you to do an initial assessment and full head-to-toe assessment on a regular patient. You know, and if you aren't taking that long to do it, you're not doing the right thing. If you're an ALS unit and you've got a heart monitor, put the leads on the patient and confirm that there is no cardiac activity. You know, if you get some kind of a definable rhythm, they could be in PEA, pulseless electric activity, cardiac arrest, but at least you've determined that they the heart's still got electrical activity. They haven't been dead very long. And so it certainly is an indication that this might be a patient that should be resuscitated or a resuscitation attempt made. These are just some things that we need to really be aware of. And I think that when you make an assumption based on what you heard in dispatch, what you've heard from bystanders, people didn't see somebody for days and they found him laying in the floor of his apartment. Maybe if he's been laying there for a couple of days, he's had food in the sink or in the trash can. And I've been in this situation. You walk into a house and it smells like crap. It smells like something died in there. Well, you take that, you find a guy on the floor who hasn't been seen for a couple of days, and you sit there and you go, oh, he's dead. Well, you know, did you touch him? Did you actually put a hand on him? Does he feel warm? You know, if people aren't dead until they're cold and until they're warm and dead, that's the thing for hypothermia. But if this isn't a hypothermia patient, they're not dead until their body has cooled in a room temperature room. And that's something that we really need to just go through all the steps of a careful assessment before we make that determination. All right, let's wrap up with a happier story. And this is one of those public awareness, public relations stories that you like to see in your local paper. And some of those stories that I point out to the rest of you as ways to reach out and educate your community about who you are, what kind of people are they going to expect to find on their ambulances, especially in places served by a large volunteer contingent, because obviously, you're not sure who you're getting or where they're coming from, and you might be interested to know that you might have the president of your local bank is also running in the back of the ambulance in the evenings or something like that. And it's always a great way to build awareness about your service and how it operates, but it certainly can be done for anyone, whether it's a paid or volunteer service. This particular article is from State College, Pennsylvania, and this is about a retired college professor from Penn State University, and this person decided once back in his history as a professor, he wanted to get some first aid training. He found that he enjoyed it. He became a volunteer EMT and just began operating in a local volunteer service and really enjoys it. And even as a retired professor, he finds that he really can give back to his community and still really have a lot of fun interacting and doing the things that need to get done as a volunteer EMT. And it's just a great way to educate your community. And this is just a perfect example of that kind of story that you could pitch to a local reporter. You could even write some comments and bullet points up for them. It makes it easy to write the article. And then they can just do a quick phone interview or get a picture and put it in the paper. So look at this article and use it as a guide to, again, reach out to our public. A lot of times, I really think the reason we run some of the calls we run is because we don't tell our patients about what we do and how we do it. And I think if we did a better job of educating our community, we'd have a better job doing our job in the back of the ambulance, I guess is the only way to say it. So take a look at this article. Again, links to all of these articles in the news each and every week in the Medicast are available at medicast.com/blog. In the show notes for each and every episode, you'll find a link that takes you directly to the show notes section right at the top of the page. So it's easy to find and check out there. Again, medicast.com/blog. Time for this week's tip of the week. And for this week's tip of the week, I'm very pleased to have Lisa Booz joining us again. And she has a really timely article or discussion on some toxicology and poison control issues that came up recently in the Maryland region. And in fact, as I do more research, found that this is something that's a problem across the country. So as you know, we record these segments in batches, and this is the first of the new batch, quote unquote. So let's check out what Lisa has to talk about this month. This is Jamie Davis, the Pod Medic, and we've got Lisa Booz back from the Maryland Poison Center with another Tox Tidbits segment here. And Lisa, what are we going to be talking about this month?
Well, Jamie, this month I wanted to make your listeners aware of a new drug that we're seeing at poison centers and emergency departments are seeing And there's not much known about this drug, and it's a legal drug. So I wanted to go over that so people can be on the lookout for this. Poison centers have been alerted. We've been receiving emails lately and been hearing from emergency departments about patients that are there, and they supposedly have smoked a synthetic marijuana called K2. Now, K2 is sold in convenience stores, it's sold in gas stations, and you can actually buy it over the internet. It's sometimes sold as incense, and it actually looks like potpourri and is probably dried herbs or flowers or tobacco that's sprayed with a substance that produces psychotropic effects that's supposed to be like marijuana. But what we're finding is that these teens and adults recently that have been using this stuff are experiencing severe agitation, tachycardia, hypertension, and vomiting. And these really aren't symptoms that you would expect from marijuana, which typically would make you kind of mellow and slow you down. So we're not really 100% sure what's going on here. A little background about K2, it's also called fake marijuana. Some other names for the product are Spice and Genie, Zohai, and it also goes by the chemical designations HU210 and also JWH018. Now, actually, the JWH018 is not a new drug at all. It was originally synthesized by a researcher at Clemson University in the mid-1990s, and it was found to mimic the effects of marijuana, but appeared to be more potent, quite a bit more potent than marijuana. But nothing really came of it, and years later, it started to be used and sprayed on leafy material in Europe, and now it's starting to pop up here in the United States. Just last year, in 2009, the DEA labeled it a drug and chemical of concern, and in February of this year, a shipment of JWH018 was intercepted at the airport in Philadelphia. At least two teens have been treated recently in New Jersey who purchased this JWH018 over the internet. Now, most of the reported cases of K2 toxicity and also with this other chemical have been in the Midwest, especially Missouri and Kansas, but there have been other sporadic outbreaks of this. The fact remains, though, that pretty much all of these teens and adults that are showing up in emergency departments are experiencing these sort of odd effects that we wouldn't expect to see with a marijuana-like drug. So why is this occurring? Why do they have these stimulant effects? Well, we really don't know. Current thinking is that the effects might be dose-related. So if they take in a large dose, then maybe these other effects sort of kick in. Or there might be a contaminant that's in this chemical or in this product. Maybe it's a drug like clenbuterol. And now that's a drug that's been detected in heroin samples recently, and that produces stimulant effects. We just don't know, and it's really hard to test for a drug like that. Most patients so far have tested negative for marijuana and for other drugs like cocaine, methamphetamine, and PCP. So again, we just don't really know yet what's causing those adverse effects. Now the K2, the JWH018 and all of the others are legal in most states in the United States, although as a result of these cases being reported, some counties and also some states have quickly passed laws making it illegal, or they have pending legislation, so we'll see where that goes. While we're on the subject of synthetic drugs, there are a number of other synthetic or designer drugs that mimic illicit drugs of abuse. They've been created primarily to get around existing laws, but like K2, with time and as they increase in their popularity, they eventually become designated as Schedule I drugs and therefore illegal. Some actually fall under an act that's called the Federal Analog Act, and that designates any drug that's similar in chemical makeup to an illegal drug to also be illegal if it's intended for human consumption. So these chemicals could actually be legal if you were using it for research purposes, but if it's intended to be taken in for somebody to get high, then it's illegal for that reason. Many of the ecstasy tablets that are sold that have been analyzed recently actually don't contain ecstasy, or they contain a combination of drugs, and a number of them contain chemically synthesized drugs that have very similar effects. One of them that's been found on a lot of the ecstasy tablets is benzylpiperazine, which is also called BZP, And that has stimulant effects like an amphetamine, but when you mix the BZP with some other designer drugs, it will produce psychotropic effects like ecstasy does. Some other of the these designer or synthetic drugs are DMT, foxy-methoxy, TFMPP, 2C, bromofly, 2CB, and 2CI. And they're just a few of some of them that have been synthesized and that we're finding out about. And all of them have stimulant and or hallucinogenic properties. Now, we were recently consulted, meaning the Maryland Poison Center. We were called about a young adult who reportedly took tablets containing 2CI. This 2CI does have properties similar to LSD and also ecstasy. He developed severe agitation and seizures and tachycardia. Now, complicating the assessment of this patient and others is that, again, most of these drugs do not show up on routine tox screens, and they cannot be tested for. So it's hard to identify these drugs and to prove that that's what is causing the clinical effects. Fortunately, so far, there haven't been a huge number of patients flooding the emergency rooms with severe effects from K2 or these other designer drugs, but EMS providers and nurses and physicians should be on the lookout for these unusual cases. An important point to remember is that these drugs are untested and they're unregulated, so the effects that someone experiences after abusing these drugs is really quite unpredictable. It's important to report these cases to the local poison control center so that we can collect information on them, and this in turn will help us to learn more about the drugs and to be able to assess and manage cases in the future and manage them optimally. So the poison center number is 1-800-222-1222, and the specialists, they are available 24/7 to answer questions and help with these patients when you don't really know what's going on with them.
Yeah, you really outline how important it is when you even have a just a little nagging suspicion that somebody might have overdosed or taken some illicit material for unintended uses, that you should really get on the radio or on the phone to the Poison Center immediately so that they can give you the assessment questions to ask, so that you may not be asking the right question to get the answer you need.
That's right. And we do hear cases from all over the state, for example, where maybe a local EMS provider or a local emergency department may have not heard of this drug or heard that there's an outbreak in another state of a particular drug. And so they're not familiar with it. They don't really know what to expect. So it helps us by reporting the patients to us. It helps us to know about these drugs and to know what to expect, but it also will help the provider, the healthcare provider, in knowing, as you said, like what questions to ask and what to look for.
Yeah, and it's spring break time, so a lot of students are coming home from colleges and other areas bringing back something new to show their friends, and we need to be aware of that, and we could be seeing things that just aren't usual for our region.
Right, and this K2 and the other slang names, the other products, are really gaining in popularity, it seems. So we expect to hear some more cases.
Well, great, Lisa. Thanks for that, and we'll see you again next month.
All right. Thanks, Jamie.
Always good stuff from Lisa Booze for the tip segment this week. And I guess I just want to remind all of you there's links to everything discussed in this segment with Lisa. I found some good news articles to educate yourself a little bit further about K2. And of course, you can always get more information from your local poison center. So contact them, see if they've seen this drug in your region, and perhaps arrange to get some information sent to you for a training session, or have somebody come out and do a training session on this and other local drug-related and poisoning issues. It's just a great way to continue to educate yourself and your community, and you can find out more at your local poison center. You can always, of course, subscribe to the Tox Tidbits email newsletter from the Maryland Poison Center. You don't have to be in the state of Maryland to subscribe to that. They'll send you an email notice when it's available, and you can go right to their site and download it. It's a nice little PDF file. You can find out more at mdpoison.com, Maryland Poison Center at mdpoison.com. And again, a special thank you to our Tox specialist, Lisa Booz from the Maryland Poison Center. And that's going to wrap up this week's episode of the Medic Cast. Short and sweet for you this week. In any case, you can find out more information over at medicast.com/blog in the show notes section. Definitely follow up on the information you found here, both the information on the poisonings and, of course, the news articles, so you can follow up on what's going on. I'd love to hear back from you, so if you'd like to leave a comment on the show notes page or shoot me an email, go ahead and send me an email. You can send those emails in to podmedic@mac.com. And also, don't forget, you can call in on the voicemail line, 941-306-3342. 941-30-MEDIC is your resource to call in and get a hold of me directly here. So I love to hear from you, and maybe we can put your call on the show. So definitely check in on the voicemail line. I'd like to also remind you to make sure you follow up on what I'm doing over at the MedicCast fan page at Facebook, facebook.com/MedicCast. Tell all your friends about it and spread the word on Facebook and Twitter and other places. Of course, you can also find me at my personal page under PodMedic at Facebook, and you can also follow me on Twitter, twitter.com/PodMedic. So that's it. We'll wrap up the show, as we always do, with some great PodSafe music. Again, this week from the PodSafe Music Network at music.podshow.com, a new band for us this week, Mercury in Summer, and their song, No, I Won't Let You Go. And as I said in last week's nursing show, I'm not going to let any of you listeners go either. So I want to make sure you're checking out the show. Remember, the MedicCast gets posted here for you every Sunday night, so it's available for you first thing Monday morning to sync up to your music player, your MP3 player, or to check out at work. And you can follow up on the MedicCast either listing directly on the webpage or subscribe in iTunes and other places. So that's all available for you here. So let's wrap up with this song from Mercury in Summer, and I will just end as I always do, reminding each and every one of you that I'm Jamie Davis, the Pod Medic, and please, folks, remember, scene safety, BSI.
You go, not today. No, I won't let you go. No way.